right. As you are aware, the first case has been reset because of a flu problem. So we didn't want lawyers in here who might be sick, so that's why you all are going first. If Ms. Bezak will please announce the first case. All right, Mr. Birdwell.
May it please the court.
Morning.
I'm here on behalf of Dr. Chance Dingler as an appellee. I'm here on behalf of Nakona Medical Clinic as an appellant. Here on behalf of the clinic as a cross appellee. I will deal primarily with regards to the complaints that Dr. Dingler has. If the court has any questions about the other, I can deal with that based upon the court's questions or we can address it in rebuttal. Regardless of which of the issues the court has before it, I think the standard to be applied with regard to both of the appeals is going to essentially be a de novo standard. That is clearly the case with regard to the appeal by Dr. Dingler. Because the court is being asked to interpret what the word serve means as employed by Section 74351A of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code concerning the service of an expert report on a party or a party's attorney within 120 days of the filing of the original petition. That is a matter of statutory construction, and as the court is well aware, matters of statutory construction are matters that the court reviews de novo. The facts are not in dispute for the most part, and I'll deal with them where they are as they come up. The court has been cited to several cases that have come down dealing with the issue of whether or what in fact did the legislature intend when they employed the word serve in subsection A. This court held in Jane versus Stafford that in fact the legislature intended to apply the meaning of service, and not only just the meaning but also the methods of service set forth in Rule 21A of the Rules of Civil Procedure in the context of service of objections. As the court is aware, under the old statute, under 4590I, Section 1301, there was no deadline for the filing of a motion to dismiss for the legal inadequacy of a report. That is a new thing that the legislature added on to the statute in 2003. As a result, they use the word serve both in the context of serving the report to a party or to the party's attorney, but also in the context of serving the objections to the claimant and or the claimant's attorney. And so there is absolutely nothing to indicate that that word as used in those two contexts is any different. Whether it is with regard to the report itself or whether it is with regard to the objection. Since this court has held that not only the meaning of serve but the method of serve applies in the context of serving objections, I believe this panel is bound by that particular ruling, short of an en banc reconsideration by the court.
Mr. Birdwell.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the Janes against Stafford case, the dates upon which service was had were well past 120 days by anybody's count, weren't they?
I believe they were, yes, Your Honor.
And so the issue and controlling issue in that case is not so much the method of service as much as it is the fact that there wasn't any service within the 120 days in the Jane case.
I would disagree, Your Honor, in that clearly the claimant was making the contention that, in fact, the adequacy of the report itself could not be challenged in any way, shape, or form because that particular defendant, I think it was one of the defendants and not both of them, had specifically failed to file the objections within 21 days of the service of the report. The court thought it was a matter of consequence because the court went on to analyze the fact that, in fact, the objections had not been made within 21 days. They had been made within the 24 days that particular defendant argued it had to serve objections. So it is a matter of consequence with regard to the ruling of the court. It was not something that the court otherwise would have said something along the lines of, we need not reach it because it's a moot point.
I'm reading the opinion, and what it's talking about is reports for two doctors and a nurse. And there's a waiver of one of the reports from the doctor, and then the nurse's report's found by this court to have had no expressions of opinions concerning Dr. Jane's conduct and therefore was not applicable for that reason. The reports that were filed for Dr. Mark's reports were the ones that were filed by certified mail and under Rule 21A, but more than 120 days after the date of the filing of the petition with no excuse.
All right.
Okay. And so in this case...
So the court's suggesting it's dicta.
I'm suggesting it's not controlling, as you indicated in your brief. I mean, in your statement to us a moment ago.
Well, let's take it as dicta. Let's take it as not controlling. And the court, and let's say that this court can write on a blank slate. The court's still dealing with a majority of the courts of appeals that have held that, in fact, 21A does determine the issue of what constitutes service. And the reasoning of those courts, I think, should, in fact, be controlling on this court.
The trial court here held that the report of the report made to Dr. Dingler was sufficient and overruled and dismissed it. I mean, they refused to dismiss the case based on your motion to strike on objections that that report was not timely filed.
I don't.
Your objections were, the lower court objections were, this report's out of time against Dr. Dingler.
Right.
And therefore, it should be dismissed. The case should be dismissed. And the lower court said, no, we're going to keep Dr. Dingler in the case. And then the other side of the case is that your contention in the lower court was the filings as far as the clinic, Nakona Clinic, there were no allegations in the original petition filed of vicarious liability. Which pleading do you believe is the live pleading that was before the court for the plaintiffs, their original petition or their first amended petition?
Their original petition, Your Honor. Because the amended petition wasn't even on file at the time of the hearing.
And was it on file at the time of the ruling? Had been on file before the order was entered for months?
I believe it was on file before the ruling, Your Honor.
And I want to ask you if you're familiar with the opinion of the Beaumont Court in the case of Moheb against Harvey.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the reasoning in that opinion, wouldn't that apply to this case in terms of the original petition, even if that were the live pleading?
No, Your Honor. We're going to the cross appeal, so let me address that at this point in time. It wouldn't apply for a couple of reasons. One, the pleading in that specific case did plead a vicarious liability claim. The pleading specifically said that, in fact, the PA was responsible through its agents, etc. It also involved a PA that was named after the defendant physician. And so those two factual distinctions are I think, critical here.
All right. How about the law that's announced that if you have a claim that's against a association, that the association can't practice medicine, only through its agents can it practice medicine? And that's good law. You recognize that as good law, don't you?
I understand that's law, Your Honor. That wasn't in the pleadings at any point in time. That was something that they could have done. They didn't do it. If you look at the pleadings at the time of the motion and the time the court heard the motion with regard to that matter. The pleadings said specifically a negligence, direct negligence claim against the PA. It made there is absolutely nothing in that pleading, nothing in that pleading, for the court to infer that there is any type of agency relationship between Dr. Dingler and Nakona Clinic. The reason why the Moab court could infer that and could find that in fact it didn't matter with regard to the PA is because the PA was named after the defendant physician, and in fact the defendant physician was taking the position that, well, because you didn't say specifically that that I was the agent of a PA that was specifically named after me, that in fact was inadequate with regard to the pleading in that case.
I'm sorry, with that case, and I understand it, and you and I are on all fours by everything you just said. However, I'm still interested in whether it's your position before this court that the original petition was not amended in this case and that the live pleading before the court at the time the court ruled was the plaintiff's first amended petition.
And the reason for our position in that regard, Your Honor, is that this is a dispositive motion, okay? It would, just as a summary judgment is a dispositive motion, and the courts in the summary judgment context have held that any pleading that is done with regard to a hearing on a motion for summary judgment, as it would with regard to a trial on the merits, you have to have leave with regard to that. This is a dispositive motion. There was no leave requested and no leave granted with regard to that, and there's nothing in the order or in the hearing for this court to infer that, in fact, the trial court considered the first amended petition in any way, shape, or form. So the court is asking me to say that, yes, indeed, even though it was on file, okay, it's on file. He didn't have leave. There's nothing in the order to indicate that he, in fact, considered the first amended petition in any way, shape, or form. In fact, because the court granted the motion with regard to the clinic, I mean, because the court granted the motion with regard to the clinic, under those circumstances, the inference is that he didn't consider the first amended petition.
And is there any provision in the statute, in 74351, or in any of the other statutes that might be applicable to this dismissal type of motion that says that specifies a deadline for the amending of the pleadings?
No, there's not, Your Honor.
And are you aware of any case that says anything about that?
No, Your Honor, I'm not.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Birdwell, quickly, I want to backtrack, though, a little bit. When you were talking about what definition of service we're going to use in these matters.
Yes, ma'am.
I mean, if we look at that in the context of the whole statute, though, that instruction to serve the report also says serve the report on a party. So in this case, we have a situation where service came after I think it was after the 120 days. But in any event, if you use the date of service on Dr. Dingler himself, the 120 days doesn't really run until the next year in 08. So how can you be required to serve somebody within a time period and they're not even a party yet?
Well, if I may, Your Honor, the critical thing here is that, in fact, the language of 75351A anticipates that, in fact, they will be a party. The word party is used. The word party's attorney is used. Objections have a deadline that is keyed to the service upon a party or a party's attorney. Everything about that provision anticipates that all of the deadlines and all of the things that are to occur have to occur within the context of a properly served and answered context. The cases upon which counsel relies, and specifically the Spiegel case, don't take that into consideration at all. And in fact, that's pointed out in the Poland versus Ott case that we've cited to the court. That's the key distinction, is that the legislature is creating for the very first time, they're doing away with the language of furnish. So they clearly are using a word serve, which is a term of art, okay? So furnish, that gives you some way to deliver it different ways. Serve, no. And serve is in the context of being a party or a party's attorney. Okay? And the key to that is, and what Spiegel doesn't contemplate is, and in fact, in a decision that came down earlier this year in a case called Carrick versus Summers, in a footnote in that case, the Beaumont Court specifically says we didn't take any of that into consideration in Spiegel. We're not, because we don't have to in this case, but we're noting we didn't take that into consideration in Spiegel. And that's the key here, is that if you are allowing some type of actual notice to be read into the statute here, as opposed to the methods of service, the whole point in the rules for the methods of service is to obtain evidence that demonstrates conclusively when someone was actually served. Because only then can you start triggering the deadline. If there's some, in the Spiegel case, the service complained of was, and if I may, Your Honor, I see my time's
just wrap up your
it up real quickly. In the Spiegel case, the service that was complained of was, it was handed to the receptionist at the doctor's office when he was out of town. So when in fact he actually got it, when in the court never went into that at all for purposes of when those 21 days start running. So I think when you look at the entirety of the statute, it clearly has to be interpreted in terms of, this is a litigation action that has to happen, that the parties have to be before the court, and then the deadline start, and then the triggers, that's when those things have to happen. And the cases we've cited, I think, demonstrate that, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Birdwell. Mr. Minton? And Ms. Spisak, will you give Mr. Minton an extra minute, should he need it?
I'll try not to need it.
That's all right.
May it please this honorable court, counsel, Greg.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's been some time since I've argued a case in exactly this format of being a cross-appellant, cross-appellee. If I seem a little bit disjointed, it's simply because of that issue. I'm going to try to put whatever rebuttal is necessary into my main argument. Nonetheless, I want to take up the issue first with regard to the service under Rule 21A. A number of courts of appeal have relied on Rule 21A as far as being the sine qua non of service of an expert's report in a medical malpractice case. What I would suggest to the court, I have been away from medical malpractice defense for a number of years, and this is the first time I've delved back into the pool. It may be the last, I don't know. But what I see has changed with the legislature's recodification of the healthcare liability statutes is that there are a number of holes. It's important to remember, Mr. Birdwell referred to this as a dispositive motion. Why is it a dispositive motion? It's not a summary judgment. It's not a summary proceeding. It's not a trial on the merits. The issue is whether the plaintiff has presented a threshold of merit with regard to their case by way of their expert report. Now, the statute says you serve your reports with 120 days after the petition is filed. Well, if you follow that line of reasoning, then you would have to say that the statute also means that you have to serve the physician within 120 days, but that's nowhere in the statute. I believe that was also addressed in the Spiegel versus Strother opinion, but what I suggest is that the overarching principle in trying to make sense of these cases and make sense of these statutes is pragmatism. That is, you have the corporate healthcare entity who served with the report timely. Nobody says that didn't happen. After the fact, you have, as is indicated, I think it's at page 55 of the record, Dr. Dengler is served at Nakona Medical Clinic, and the answer is filed by the same lawyers that represented him or that represent the corporate clinic. Now, I'm not suggesting that there is some formal doctrine of relation back here. What I'm suggesting is more along the lines of no harm, no foul. 21A represents a form of service that comports with due process. But I have not seen any case that says that that is the absolute bare minimum of due process. For example, in an injunction case, a person can be held guilty of violating an injunction even if they were not served with the order, if they have actual notice of the terms, if they actually read it. Well, in this case, we have no indication that Dr. Dingler never received the report from the lawyers that ultimately ended up representing him. Now, I know that that doesn't necessarily appear of the record, but the issue then becomes, if Dr. Dingler is saying, gee, I was never told about what this report said, whose burden should it be to bring that up? 21A is a good rule. Most of the time, perhaps even 95% of the time, it probably is a workable rule. But there are instances where I think the court has to take a pragmatic approach, as you suggested, Justice Livingston, by your question about about the service issue. He wasn't a party until 120 days or more than 120 days after the suit was filed. That you're going to require the court to craft an answer. And if the court is going to craft an answer, that answer has to serve both purposes of the policy behind the expert reports, a showing of merit, but also not just a wholesale